Welcome to The Excellent Fiduciary, a podcast from Roland Criss, where we explore what it takes to meet and exceed the demands of managing a retirement plan in today's complex market. Now, let's begin today's show with an introduction from our Roland Criss host.
Welcome to today's show. I'm Ronald Hagan, and we're discussing today vendors that provide services to employee benefit plans. Today, we're going to focus on retirement plans. Organizations that sponsor employee benefit plans are generally responsible for ensuring that their plans comply with federal law. That includes, of course, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, or ERISA. Most employers rely on service providers to advise and assist them with their employee benefit plan duties. This includes record keepers, consultants, and investment advisors. For this reason, selecting competent vendors is one of an employer's most critical responsibilities. Now, that's because it's a regulated fiduciary function. The pace of lawsuits against employers related to vendors of services for retirement and welfare benefit plans raises questions about some service providers' trustworthiness. Now, before we dive any deeper into the story, it's time to welcome Christy Arthur to the Excellent Fiduciary podcast. She is Senior Director of Fiduciary Solutions at Roland Criss. Hi, Christy. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, Ron, thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to participate. And today's subject is vital for senior finance and human resources managers to consider. So thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm eager to hear your comments. And before we launch into some of those, I think an observation that I've made is that less than a decade ago, trust was a go-to descriptor for enterprises and executives who were seeking to alleviate their personal concerns regarding the employees' financial futures. Chief executive officers trusted well-reputed investment firms to deliver on promises of exponential returns, for example. The CEOs also assumed record keepers would protect their employees' personally identifiable information, or PII. Investment and retirement plan committees have traditionally trusted that investment firms and record keepers look out for their best interest and take away critical aspects of the committee's fiduciary risk. But that's changed. What's happened?
Well, the trust that those investment and record-keeping firms enjoyed really was before the outbreak of many lawsuits against employers for breaches of their fiduciary duty. Expensive and time-consuming litigation is eroding the notion of that complete trust in service providers. Those lawsuits shifted the burden of awareness squarely back onto the executive class's shoulders, or rather, maybe a better way to say it is, employers have learned the hard way that they bear all the liability, and there were gaps or risks that really were not adequately communicated to them by those trusted vendors.
Well, as we all know, the U.S. Department of Labor regulates retirement plans. Christy, let's refer to that as the DOL. Where does the DOL fit into this discussion today?
Oh, where indeed does the DOL fit? Well, as we know, many ERISA plan sponsors, mainly the 401ks and 403bs, many are sanctioned every year by the DOL, or really rather by the EBSA, the Employee Benefit Security Administration, the enforcement arm for the DOL, for failing to select and monitor service providers prudently. Now, judging by the numbers, the people who administer plans for their employers, the plan administrators, though, to try to avoid confusion, there are so many different types of administrators within an ERISA plan. For our purposes today, I'm going to refer to these folks as primary fiduciaries, the people actually managing the ERISA work for their employer. These folks represent a large community that are either unaware that they're required to follow a prudent process for vendor selection and monitoring, or they lack proper training as to what that really means. Not only are those primary fiduciaries required to conduct substantial evaluations before and after they hire a service provider. But then in the case of investment managers, they have an additional responsibility. They have to create and follow an additional process to evaluate the risk in the underlying investments proposed by their advisor.
Litigation, and you alluded to it just briefly, forms a very important backdrop to this story that we're talking about today. In fact, our review of many court cases involving breaches of fiduciary duty indicates that a large portion of those cases involve complaints related to record-keeping firms and investment advisors. So what are we to make of it?
Well, so in some respect, it's hard to understand how so many well-run organizations get into trouble for not managing their ERISA service providers prudently. And I say this because most businesses hire vendors for all kinds of services in their routine place of commerce. The lack of adequately trained, quote unquote, buyers of services shows how even the most astute businesses can easily overlook and thus often fail those essential ERISA fiduciary duties. Many are still not making that association between the process of procurement of business-related services and the procurement of ERISA-related services. But there are plenty of other factors equally as critical as lack of purchasing skills that contribute to trouble for retirement plan officials. A few that we witness regularly include a perceived complexity of investments, which we know many providers overstate to inflate their value, the incredible minutia involved in record keeping administration and all that entails, and the tendency to rely on certain vendors for guidelines on selecting other vendors to the same retirement plan. The recent trend among record keepers and investment advisors to hold themselves out as a 316 fiduciary is an example of how vendors invoke empty claims to enhance their mystique or value. And these factors can create a dangerous brew for the well-intentioned primary fiduciary who isn't aware of or skilled in procurement process or procurement standards or ERISA for that matter.
Well, you've mentioned purchasing skills, and that brings to mind a reality that every business uses, a supply chain. You alluded to that just a moment ago. Every well-established enterprise, it seems, spends a lot of time getting accustomed to vendors and managing the supply chain, whether it's a manufacturer, a distributor, a service provider, or an educational institution. Let's talk for just a little bit about how supply chain management correlates with ERISA's fiduciary duty.
Absolutely. Excellent question. So managing an employee benefit plan supply chain, that's quite a mouthful, an employee benefit plan supply chain, managing that is the most fundamental duty of a primary fiduciary. The law expressly requires prudence in the execution of that duty. Prudence focuses on the process of making decisions, as we all well know. So, buyers of ERISA services, that ERISA supply chain, should document their findings and the basis for those decisions. Vendor selection is subject to standards meant to prohibit bias in that process. So that means, to give an example, that plan sponsors might be cautious when using investment advisors to manage a record keeper search project. Many breaches of fiduciary duty lawsuits against plan sponsors have weak defenses due to conflicts of interest that infest the vendor selection and monitoring process. For years, we saw brokers align clients with subpar vendor platforms simply because those were the platforms that could accommodate payment to them, not at all because it was the best solution for the client. Those brokers had to use insurance carrier retirement plan products to be compensated as an insurance broker, leaving all of the cheaper, more flexible, and more transparent open architecture programs out of that RFP process entirely. Ron, as we know, this sort of conflicted guidance still happens, and frequently.
Yeah, that's a real good picture of the way things have been and have moved to form up the environment in which plan sponsors now operate. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems that most purchasing decisions for retirement plans are made either by human resources managers or committees that are made up of business unit managers, people not typically drawn from a procurement department. And rarely are vendors actually selected by a professional purchasing department. So what then would you say, Christy, is the critical difference between conventional procurement activity and fiduciary services purchasing?
Great question. And that's kind of where the rubber meets the road. I would say that the primary difference between the fiduciary or ERISA vendor supply chain and a typical vendor supply chain is how executives evaluate and select these vendors. So ordinary business-related vendors must satisfy several examination levels, not the least of which would be on capability, pricing, quality, and integrity. But for the fiduciary or ERISA vendor supply chain, those typical evaluation rules do not and cannot apply in the same way. Our reality in the retirement plan space is that the complicated nature of service offerings and pricing models, as well as the confusing emphasis that vendors place on the word fiduciary, we know they sling that word around quite a bit. All of that risks diluting an executive team's ability to examine the traits that really count. Critical issues that should be examined for the ERISA supply chain include things like whether the vendor charges reasonable and transparent fees for their services, whether the vendors have conflicts of interest with other vendors in their supply chain, and whether they define fiduciary duty based on actual legal statutes or their invented terms. That's what I was just alluding to, what I will call the marketing fiduciary, or using the word fiduciary inappropriately to convey a protection that doesn't really exist. This complexity leaves the corporate or executive team susceptible to things like potential fee gouging, or worse, the accidental neglect of their fiduciary duties.
Well, I thank you for that explanation to my question, the answer to my question. And as you were talking, I chuckled a bit to myself because I know how intensely concerned you are about the subject of conflicts of interest, which you alluded to during your answer to my question. I want to be sure that the audience fully appreciates the seriousness of that issue. So I know I may have caught you off guard a little bit here, but would you take a moment and elaborate on conflicts of interest for us?
I'm so glad that you've mentioned that. That's a great point. And I absolutely want to spend a few moments on the subject. So thank you for queuing that up. And the reason it's so important to me and causes me so much concern is because we know that there is a lot of confusion around what on earth is a conflict of interest. What does that mean in this ERISA space? We hear conflict and we think bad. In ERISA, it means pay more attention here. Extra monitoring needs to be done here. So to that end, I'll bring some examples in. Vendors that offer more than one category of service to a retirement plan are what we call multiple hat vendors. Now, without proper vetting and monitoring, that bundled business model, it is far more convoluted, and that can threaten the legal safety of every plan sponsor in such an arrangement. So let me say that again. Without proper vetting and monitoring, it causes problems, meaning with proper process, there are protections versus problems. The standards for managing conflicts of interest for employee benefit plans require primary fiduciaries to evaluate their vendors' conflicts of interest, and that can be serving in multiple roles, and decide whether those conflicts or that conflicted arrangement, decide whether that is acceptable as is? Is it acceptable with certain changes or maybe some additional ongoing monitoring steps? Or is the conflict not acceptable at all? Now, I'll go even further to share three guidelines found in best practices. So, number one, any employer that hires a vendor to provide more than one service. So, for example, record keeper, TPA, custodian. We see that all the time. That is commonplace in our industry. Or one that's less common but even more challenging is the TPA 316. These combinations heighten the need for diligence in monitoring these bundled, jumbled vendors. These arrangements do expose a primary fiduciary to greater risk and therefore increased monitoring responsibility. So, number two, primary fiduciaries can't just ignore it or dismiss it. They have to pay attention to these conflicts of interest. They have to have a process around it. We see this come up often in audit investigation and litigation. Primary fiduciaries should document the evaluation of the multi-service arrangement or any other such perceived conflict. And if the arrangement is determined to be acceptable, and often it is, they need to be sure they are explaining and documenting by what measures they found it to be acceptable. And this is not a one and done process. As services with a bundled arrangement continue, that should be monitored and documented ongoing. Number three, an excellent way to avoid conflict of interest risk is to examine each of those vendor services separately. So though you may be getting multiple services from one vendor, rip them apart to do your evaluation. So number one, a bundled solution means pay more attention. There's some extra monitoring here. Number two, ERISA prohibits you from ignoring it. You've got to have a process. And number three, split those services apart for a more meaningful evaluation, examination, or benchmarking. And I'll share a wisdom from Black's Law Dictionary. I keep this on my office wall to remind me about conflicts of interest. It reads, conflict of interest is a real or seeming incompatibility between one's private interests and one's public or fiduciary duties. So note the implication that even the appearance of a conflict of interest may have nearly as severe consequences as a real conflict. That's something we see in the ERISA world all the time, and this is why we encourage our clients to implement processes of regular review and monitoring of these bundled arrangements. Monitoring and documentation is that paramount protection. Now, Ron, I apologize. I know I've already talked quite a bit. I've covered a lot here related to conflicts, but if you'll allow me, I'd like to interject one more thing that we see quite frequently related to conflicts, and that is the hiring of a family member or friend. We see this a lot in the advisor space. And often that family member or family friend that is hired to be the advisor for an ERISA-based plan lacks experience in ERISA. I cannot tell you the problems that we have seen this create. So let me go on the record and say that hiring a family member or a friend to help them establish their business, to get them kicked off, or even to help them establish a line of compensation, that is not something you want to do in the ERISA world. That is a breach of fiduciary duty. Okay? It's a breach of fiduciary duty to hire a non-expert. Primary fiduciaries are called to hire prudent experts to manage the things that they do not themselves have the expertise to perform, which is often that investment due diligence. So you are called to hire a prudent expert. Someone who has never done ERISA before, this is their only plan, or they only have two, that's, you'd have a really difficult time proving in a court of law that that person is a prudent expert. So that is your calling as a primary fiduciary. Hire prudent experts and engage in a detailed examination of those vendor relationships to ensure that only reasonable expenses are paid to those bearing the most or best experience for this service type sought. a proper RFP process for a vendor will give you that fodder you need for an ERISA sanctioned yes or no, whichever that RFP may point in the end.
Well, Christy, in a matter of a few minutes, you have given our audience a tremendous wealth of not only information, but wisdom. I know that after years of experience counseling retirement plan sponsors on fiduciary issues, you have been able to assemble an inventory of experiences that are very valuable to us. And I appreciate very much your depth of discussion of the conflict of interest issue. So in order to sort of wrap up that segment of our discussion, what in real terms then are the consequences of conflicts of interest?
Oh, great, great question. And great way to kind of wrap up that particular topic. So the mere appearance of conflicts of interest has triggered a breach of fiduciary duty complaints against employers all over the U.S. There are class action lawsuits filling court dockets filed by employees alleging that their employers picked service providers from whom they received, we hear this quite a bit, improper economic inducements. That's legal speak for you pick the best solution for you, not me, the participant, to whom you are beholden to perform all fiduciary duties to my benefit. Ron, you and I know ERISA expects plan sponsors to uncover all these conflicts of interest in and around their plans and to determine whether they are acceptable with properly documented deliberations. That's a tall order, but it is required of those in a stewardship position over other people's money that we are using to pay for services for which those participants have no input in acquiring.
Well, Christy, these are great answers you've given us to a question that isn't often asked, and that's the question about conflicts of interest. I'd like now to turn our attention to the contrast in vendors' capabilities as sellers and employers as buyers of retirement plan services. Could you spend a few minutes for us on that question?
Yes, absolutely. This is a perfect spot to shift in that direction. And again, I can't overemphasize the importance of this particular topic. The DOL has studied this extensively, and their resulting opinions can sound quite chilling for those of us serving in a fiduciary capacity under ERISA. So I'm going to share some quotes in this regard from the mouth of the Department of Labor. So when addressing traits of the fiduciary supply chain, the DOL entered this warning into the public record, and I quote, vendors are specialists in the design of their products, services, and compensation arrangements, and are continually engaged in marketing to plan sponsors. Plan sponsors often lack this degree of specialization, end quote. So what do we mean here? Vendors of ERISA services are like vendors of any other service. They are trained in how to sell you their service, all their services. And they often use industry terminology that confuses primary fiduciaries who may not have proper appreciation for the risk that may be involved into trusted relationships with them.
I'm struck by the tone of the quote from the DOL you just read. It almost sounds like the DOL believes that primary fiduciaries operate on an uneven playing field when it comes to their retirement plan vendors.
That is exactly what the DOL thinks. In fact, in the preamble to ERISA Regulation 408B2, and that we know that's often referred to as the reasonable fee rule, the DOL wrote this, and I'm quoting again, even very large, relatively sophisticated plan sponsors shop for services only periodically, generally once every 3 to 5 years. Smaller, less sophisticated plan sponsors face still higher information costs. As a result, vendors are able to maintain an information advantage over their plan sponsor clients. Vendors have a strong incentive to use their information advantage to distort market outcomes in their favor. Current ERISA rules hold plan sponsors rather than vendors accountable for evaluating the cost and quality of plan services. And vendors can reap excess profit by concealing indirect compensation and attendant conflicts of interest from clients, thereby making their prices appear lower and their product quality higher. End quote. I think that says it all.
Well, it says a lot for sure. And I think if I'm a primary fiduciary and I read these words published by the DOL, I'm going to perhaps think very differently about how I go about the process of buying and even managing vendor services in the future. In other venues, Christy, we've spoken publicly about the barriers that vendors often erect to paint their offerings in a most favorable light. I know you're passionate about speaking out on this issue as well, and I think our audience would appreciate it if you would summarize the ones that employers encounter most often.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to spend some time on this. So really there are three primary barriers or veils, as we call them, that can create false positives when interacting with vendors. And we believe that this explains exactly what the DOL was talking about in that quote. So the first I will refer to as the veil of conflict, which we've talked a lot about today, but let's dive into this a little deeper. So one of the most pervasive functions of the executive class is to maximize cost efficiencies wherever possible, right? ERISA service providers work to accommodate this need by offering many fiduciary supply chain services in a bundled one-stop shop package. That probably sounds very familiar. From investment advice to record keeping to custodial duties and money management, all of those business units are often offered under one common ownership or company. Okay, as we've talked about before, multi-hat vendors. This creates a conflict of interest, extra attention required here. So the vendor's enticing claims, and all of this will sound familiar to those of you who have ever really walked through an RFP process, those enticing claims include things like gaining cost efficiencies, relying on one vendor to supervise and coordinate all of the fiduciary supply chain activities, and enabling one service provider to be intimately acquainted with the intricacies of the company's plan or a foundation's objectives. Now, to further confound that bundled situation, there are no laws within the U.S. pension system that prohibit retirement plan vendors from offering multiple services under one roof, and there are no laws that require corporate executives to avoid vendors with those conflicts of interest.
Okay, let me ask you a question right there. So if vendors claim to provide these efficiencies in this bundled multiple hat model you've talked about, and there are no laws against it, well, then why should executives who sit on fiduciary committees even care?
Oh, great question. And let me stop here for a minute and explain what I mean by there are no laws against it. That sounds very harsh. By no means am I indicating that bundled arrangements are to be avoided or that they are bad. Bundled arrangements are commonplace in our industry. Here is what I mean. Reason would follow that if something increases risk to a fiduciary, there might be some guidelines or restrictions or standards or laws around that arrangement. That's not the case here. Plan sponsors may believe that their vendors are offering protections from risk when the vendors may be creating it or actually increasing it. And that is what I mean. This is what executives need to take care to observe and monitor. Vendors are providers and sellers of service. Most are not fiduciaries. They don't think like fiduciaries. They think like producers of retirement plan widgets. That's not bad. That's just their business. The more widgets I sell you, the better. What you do with those widgets and whether you use my widgets properly is entirely on you. ERISA requires you, the executive, the committee, the plan administrators, the primary fiduciaries, you, to make sense of this very confusing environment. And beyond that, you are required to evaluate these arrangements and to document that evaluation. Many don't even realize that bundled solutions require a bit of extra review. More so even than that, primary fiduciaries who fail to conduct even a superficial review of these conflicted or bundled arrangements subject themselves and their personal assets to significant legal risk. And you heard that right. They subject themselves and their personal assets to significant legal risk. That's one of those big risks under ERISA. But process protects fiduciaries.
Great, great response to my question, and I appreciate it. In fact, that's the first barrier or the first veil that you alluded to that vendors use to entice retirement plan clients. What's next?
The next one that I would want to talk about, we call it the veil of authenticity. These are going to sound a little similar, but they each kind of touch on a different nuance of conflict. So the veil of authenticity, here's what I mean. Many service providers represent themselves as genuine, devoted partners to retirement plan sponsors from their brands. A lot of them talk about the devoted partnership. I mean, literally their brand will convey some kind of trust. Their marketing presentations, their detailed regular updates to clients, they're constantly positioning themselves as a trusted, devoted partner. By all accounts, it appears that these vendors' efforts are focused on helping their clients' retirement plans to be successful. And in many cases, they may be. As we've said, unfortunately, while primary fiduciaries may interpret that the vendors are acting solely in their best interest, some vendors are authentic really in one thing, and that one thing is their drive to be profitable. This is something that can be really hard to decipher. Now, being profitable does not necessarily exist to exclude being ethical and representing client interests. Still, U.S. pension and trust laws blur that line of profitability versus ethics to an even fainter shade of gray. As I've mentioned multiple times throughout our conversation today, the deceptive use of the ERISA 316 fiduciary tag is a perfect example of how many vendors are distorting legal jargon to appear or to inflate authenticity.
I'm glad you mentioned the use of the 316 fiduciary tag. We're seeing many vendors adopting that term to promote a role that they don't occupy, even though they charge higher fees for the designation. And it causes me to wonder what's coming up next from you when I ask you about the third barrier or the third veil.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so it's kind of to wrap it up. Our third veil is the veil of complexity. And we've talked a lot about the complexity of the ERISA environment and how this presents such an incredible challenge for our primary fiduciaries. The esoteric nature of fiduciary laws and regulations provide vendors a distinct advantage. We just heard this out of the mouth of the Department of Labor. They have an advantage when selling their services to finance and human resource executives. I would venture to guess that only a fraction of that elite class, and when I say elite class, I mean those who have had training or education related to ERISA, can fully comprehend the jargon and legal implications regarding managing other people's money, the selection of various complex plan features, and the responsibilities that they must maintain on behalf of their employees. Service providers often leverage this position to make an argument to primary fiduciaries of why they should leave it to the pros. I cannot tell you the number of presentations I've attended in my 20 plus years where a committee was all but told, you don't need to worry about this. You don't really need to know any of this. Don't even try. It's far too complex. And that's why you have me. And I want to go, no. A true ERISA professional helps to summarize the complex into easily digestible parts, but The one who really knows ERISA understands your duty to know your plan, your fees, your investments, your vendors, your processes. As we've talked about multiple times today, falling prey to that trust me argument leaves an executive team susceptible to things like fee gouging or worse, as we've mentioned multiple times, inadvertently neglecting those key fiduciary duties for which you are personally and financially liable.
Well, Christy, we're coming to the conclusion of our time for the podcast today. I believe that there is just a natural requirement that we follow this up with a discussion on the best practices that primary fiduciaries should be employing in order to avoid the kinds of difficulties that these three veils that you've mentioned or these barriers that you've talked about impose on them from a risk standpoint. Well, as we conclude, Christy, I want to thank you very much for sharing your insights with our audience. The role of the ERISA plan fiduciary continues to grow in complexity, as you've pointed out. Our firm intends to help finance and human resources executives unravel any confusion that their service providers may be responsible for creating. So to our audience, we thank you for joining us. And if you'd like help examining your fiduciary supply chain and its fees, Roland Chris specializes in that and is available to help you. We hope you'll make plans to join us for our next podcast, and you may connect with Roland Chris on LinkedIn for our weekly updates or visit our website at rolandchris.com. Have a fantastic day.